You're listening to The Big Show with Patrick Dumas on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome to Big Show Hour 4, live from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Crack Foundation, Boeing Foundation Walls. We have a simple, permanent solution. Stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. CFL draft was held last night. The Calgary Stampeders had they picked Ben LaBrassier out of McGill with their fourth overall pick. We go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk a little about the CFL draft and what else is happening around the league as we're getting close, 19 days away from the first preseason game. Can't believe it's already here. John Hodge, CFL reporter from Three Down Nation. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Let's talk about the CFL draft last night. First overall, Joel DeBlanco going to the Edmonton Elks. He already has some pro experience under his belt. He's 26 years old. Looks like the Elks are getting like a day one starter here, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, Joel DeBlanco has an interesting story. He was born in Aberdeen, Washington, and was the son of a Canadian-born father, and he was unaware that that could get him national status in the CFL until he tried to sign with the Ottawa Redblacks as an American. And then it was discovered, oh, well, you know, you could go through the draft and be considered a Canadian and likely have a longer career as a result. And so that's what DeBlanco elected to do. So, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, looking at the combine, you know, I wouldn't say he looked like a man among boys because a number of the prospects from opt-outs and COVID and things like that are a little bit older this year than in past years, but he looked extremely polished. And I also will give him full credit for this. A lot of players do not like testing. They don't like running the 40 and preparing for, you know, what at the end of the day are often, you know, more track and field events than they are football testing. But Joel outperformed all of the numbers he posted coming out of the University of Cincinnati 2 years ago when he was at the combine in Winnipeg, which goes to show that he has, if anything, dedicated himself even more to the gym since he became a professional. So, yes, I would expect Joel DeBlanco to enter the starting lineup at Edmonton before long.
And down the road, down the QE2, the Calgary Stampeders, they take a DB, Ben LaBrassier, out of McGill. He did not play last year. He was ruled ineligible because of some academic problems, but he's already likely to be one of the best DBs they have on this team. And we saw last year that the Stampeders really struggled with injuries and new players in that secondary. What are they getting here with LaBrassier?
Well, LaBrasse started his collegiate career at Syracuse, where he was a really strong special teams player, transferred to McGill, where he was a first-team U Sports All-Canadian at corner. And he's somebody who, you know, again, aside from corner, aside from special teams, can really do it all. Like, he played a lot of rover at Syracuse. That's a position that would be somewhat akin to the strong side linebacker position in the CFL. Where does he fit long term? I think he probably fits at safety. That's traditionally where CFL teams play their Canadian DB. But I think that was a huge position of need for the Stamps. I actually think Benjamin LaBrosse is the best Canadian DB on their team right now.
Wow.
Though the Stamps haven't started a Canadian DB the last couple of years, I think he gives them the opportunity to do so before long. Do I think he's a day one starter? No, because if in fact he is going to play the safety position, he'll need some time to learn it. But I think he is going to be a very strong impact player on special teams because he's got true NFL measurables. He ran 4.5 at 6'1", 189, vertical leap of almost 40 inches. He is as athletic as you can really find guys, not just in the CFL draft, but even, you know, cast offs from the NFL. Not a lot of guys have that type of testing acumen.
Yeah, and he'll get a little bit of a look down in the NFL as well. He's been invited to the rookie camp with the New York Giants. Of that first round, I know there's a few players that maybe Saskatchewan getting Kyle Hurgle there. That's a hell of a player, but you know maybe there's a chance that guy's playing in the NFL a little bit. Is there a good pick, like a good value pick that, hey, he might not be here right away, but you know down the line we're going to be getting a good player?
Well, you know, one guy I was surprised to see go as early as he did, but I also think there's tremendous value in is Nick Weep out of the University of Saskatchewan. Went to the Riders at 12, and the reason I say I was surprised is because he unfortunately suffered torn ACL during the Hardy Cup playoffs with the Huskies. And so he's not going to be ready to play day one.
Yeah.
He's somebody who, had he been healthy, probably would have been a first-round pick, maybe an early second. Ends up going early second anyway. And I mean, the Riders, after that, I thought, got some more great value. I mean, yes, Hurgle at three is a tremendous player you might never see. But they got Dell Duncan Busby, who I think is a very good receiver in three, and then Malik Straker, who is an extremely productive defensive player at a high level of NCAA competition at Arkansas State in the fourth. So the Riders draft stands out to me. And again, Nick Weave is one of those names where, you know, he went 12th overall, which is still respectable, but it wouldn't surprise me if 5, 6, 7 years down the road, we're looking going, man, I feel like he should have gone even higher despite the injury.
A little bit, like overall, you saw like this, some of the Canadian, like guys that were in the NFL, like Theo Benedet, he was taken in the NFL draft. He was taken, I believe, in the second round, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, by the BC Lions as well. Were any of the guys that were taken in the NFL draft that were taken in the CFL draft, how do you project their, I guess all anything can happen come NFL minicamp and training camp, but who's going to be maybe the longest down in the NFL before coming up into the CFL, if ever?
Well, the Blue Bombers took Giovanni Manu out of the University of British Columbia near the end of the fifth round, and that was a surprise to me simply because of how high he was selected NFL draft. Like, well, and the Detroit Lions actually traded up to get him. They gave up a third-round pick in 2025 to take him there. So to me, that was a surprise. I think the chances of him playing in the CFL are very, very low. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a guy that you kind of have in your system now in your hopper. I liked BC's value at 71, taking Theo Johnson out of Penn State. He was also a fourth round pick in the NFL draft to the New York Giants. You know, he at 6'6", 260 pounds. You know, I don't know where you project him in the CFL. If he ever were to play up here, could he play slot at that size? Maybe H-back, certainly fullback, maybe. So those are some of the guys who, you know, teams will be waiting on for a while. Benedet is an interesting one because a lot of people, I think, thought he would get drafted into the NFL, and he didn't. He's just a little bit late. Mm-hmm. And I actually think he's a better player right now than his former UBC teammate Giovanni Manu. And I actually think he's a better fit for the CFL. Manu is more of a bigger body, doesn't move as well laterally, but obviously has off-the-charts athleticism for his size, whereas Benedet, you know, he bends better, he moves better, and he's just a lot lighter. Like Benedet measured, and I believe, at 295 pounds at his pro day versus Manu, who was 352. So, to me, Benedet, I mean, 15 is a little early maybe for BC, but I also think the Lions don't necessarily want to add to their cap. I think they're pressed up against it. And so I think kicking the can down the road a little bit and saying, hey, we're going to go ahead and get maybe not the guy that the NFL sees as being the highest ranked, but we're going to take the guy who might be the best fit for the CFL, and we're going to do so right in that mid-second round. And they have the extra bonus of an extra second-round pick. So to me, rolling the dice there made some sense.
Another player that he's not a Canadian, but he did play in the CFL last year, ended up being Rookie of the Year, Quantes Stiggers, who was drafted in the fourth round, the DB by the New York Jets. His story, if you don't know, obviously, our listeners, he was supposed to go to college in 2020. His dad passed away. He had to quit school, go work, and help out the family. His mom forges his name to go play in the fan-controlled league, 7-on-7. His tape finds his way up to the Toronto Argonauts, and he puts on a heck of a show in the CFL, and now he's an NFL player. Do you think that's going to happen a little bit more? Maybe guys that don't have the best of luck, you know, find in college or something goes on, they can find their way into the CFL, or is maybe Stiggers like a one-time case?
Well, I mean, with, you know, there is a path, right, to the pros in the NFL through the CFL, and if you're somebody who's maybe not terribly academic, right, or maybe you're somebody with extenuating circumstances, or you're somebody who wants to make money, you know, before potentially going to the NFL, the CFL is a valuable option, right? It's I don't think it'll ever become the norm, especially as like top college players can get paid now while they're through NIL money. while they're competing collegiately. But I mean, yeah, it's not the first time this has happened. I've seen some people say that, like, oh, for the first time a CFL player. That's not true. It has happened, I think, three previous times, mm-hmm. not since 1999, that a CFL player has been drafted to the U.S. But I mean, I think it's fascinating, and though I don't think it'll ever be a common route, I do suspect that at some point in the future we'll see somebody come along with a story similar to Quantes and take full advantage of it, just as he did.
Well, that's an awesome story. We're all going to be rooting for him for sure. And they use a high pick on him as well, so they do believe in him. It was held yesterday afternoon. I know it doesn't get a lot of fanfare, but what's the overall read with this global draft? I know, like, the CFL, it's still in its early infancies. I mean, the Stamps got their punter out of it. I remember Theodric Hansen making some huge tackles on special teams in the 2019 Grey Cup. But is the league starting to find a little bit more quality in this global draft?
My colleague, J.C. Abbott, really focuses heavily on this draft, and he indicated to me that this was not a terribly strong group.
Mm-hmm.
The first overall pick to the Elks was Etuva Mauga-Clemens, who played meaningful games at Nebraska. I think he's got some value as a special teams mm-hmm. player in the CFL, but I mean, there's a reason why five of the players taken in the first round are kickers and punters. And that's because teams still, generally speaking, want to use their global spot on a punter or a place kicker. I mean, seven of the 18 picks were punters and kickers again. And I think a lot of these are some of them are futures, right? Some of them are guys mm-hmm. who might have a little bit of NFL interest or might be going back to school, that kind of thing. I think it's fair to say that this program is still in its infancy. Yeah. I think when it was created, the goal was to open new revenue streams globally. I don't think that was ever realistic. I don't think that's ever going to happen. But I do think that when it comes to this program, we might see the level of player at least improve, but for right now, it was not a terribly strong group today.
Away from the draft, into some more off-season stuff, the Toronto Argonauts, they have, obviously, their quarterback, Chad Kelly, has been going through some off-season controversy here with the sexual assault allegations. I know the league was looking into it back in February. It's now May 1st. We're going to have camps opening up here. What's the league doing with Chad Kelly? Is the investigation still going on? Is there any news to report on this? Because it just feels like the league just kind of swept it under the rug. And because, I mean, the woman that was accused, she ended up being fired by the Argonauts in the end anyway. So what do you think is going to end up happening here with Chad Kelly and the Argos in the league?
Well, I'm not going to speculate as to what the investigation will find, but I mean, there is an investigation ongoing from an independent body. Three Down Nation has verified that players from that organization, individuals from that organization, have been interviewed as part of that organization, so we know what's taking place. I would imagine that the team and the league wants this done before camp. Like the only time that GM Mike Pinball Clements and head coach Ryan Dinwiddie have addressed this, they've made it clear that they see Chad as their starter for 2024. But I obviously don't think it's in the best interest of anybody for this investigation to go into the regular season. That being said, mm-hmm. I also think that it's very important to get this investigation correct, right? There's dozens and dozens of parties, presumably, worth talking to. We know that Kelly and the Argos have very recently filed their defense, and reading the court documents, they are vehemently denying these accusations. And so obviously, only one side is telling the truth. And so I think it's good for this investigation to be taking place and be thorough. And I appreciate the frustration of fans with the timeline, but I also think, from the CFL's perspective, you have to get this right.
Yep.
And generally speaking, when you want a job done right, it's not going to be done fast, right? It's going to take some time. So would they love to have it done by camp opening? Mm-hmm. And by the way, rookie camps open in a week from today.
Yep.
I'm sure they would. Will that happen? I don't know. I wish I did. If I did, I'd be the first to tell you.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the Stampeders offseason. They did some nice, tidy work, I thought, you know, bringing back a lot of their guys. They were active, and they bring in some quarterback competition. I don't know if it's true competition, but maybe just a guy that can maybe push, you know, Jake Mayer to be maybe what the Calgary Stampeders envision him to be. Overall, how do you like this Stamps offseason? I know it's been a rough few years here for the Stamps fans who expect this team to be at the top of the West Division year in, year out.
I think they made some nice moves. I mean, Demiryu Houston, I think coming over from Winnipeg as an all-star to kind of settle that secondary, I think is a good move. Obviously, we talked about the addition of Benjamin LeBrosse mm-hmm. as well. I think that DB group needed work. I really like that they were able to keep that defensive line together for the most part with guys like Mike Rose, James Waters. I think that unit went healthy. Was probably as good as any in the CFL this past season. I will say, though, I was a little bit surprised they didn't do more on the offensive side of the football. I mean, this team appears to be rolling with Dedrick Mills mm-hmm. and Peyton Logan in the backfield, obviously with Kadeem Carey not being retained. But receiver-wise, I mean, like Reggie Bagleton had a great year. Obviously, Malik Henry got banged up. We'll see what happens with guys like Mark and Michelle if they can kind of, you know, mm-hmm. find that level they were at some point. I know they're relying on their Canadians to take a big step. I mean, Jalen Philpott missed all of last season due to injury. You know, Cole Tucker was playing the three-down game for the first time after playing collegiately at Northern Illinois. And then Clark Barnes got hurt. So mm-hmm. so I think that's obviously a big part of it. But I was surprised that this team didn't do more at the quarterback position. I think Matthew Schiltz is a very solid, you know, kind of journeyman who can move the ball with his feet, but I'm skeptical that he alone will be enough to kind of push Jake Mayer to try to reach that same level he did in 2021 when he kind of took the league by storm. So I think it was certainly a decent off season. I was a little surprised that this team didn't do more, but obviously this is a club that likes its talent, that still believes in its roster, and for their sake, hopefully their trust in the kind of their incumbents is well placed come 2024.
And overall, like, the West is improved. I mean, the Bombers might not have the kung fu grip on the division like they've had in the past, but you know, they're still a quality team. They probably have the best quarterback in the league still, and really they're just seconds away from potentially having four straight Grey Cups. What is it in Winnipeg that they have to do to try and change it up? Because I mean, they've got so close to having four straight Grey Cups. Is there something that's missing, or has it reached the point where they're aging at a point where, hey, they're gonna fall down here sooner rather than later?
I mean, this is when it comes to Winnipeg, I think that they did a good job of, to at least some extent, working over the roster this offseason, mm-hmm. right? Jermarcus Hardrick left the team. You know, 33-year-old was the West Division's most outstanding offensive lineman this past season, but, was a little bit on the older side. I was a little bit surprised that they opted for that rather than keeping Hardrick and mm-hmm. then moving on from Stanley Bryan at left tackle, who's older. But you know, they moved on from Jackson Jeffcoat, who elected to retire mm-hmm. rather than going elsewhere in the league. So they have started to work over the roster a little bit. I think that maybe they would have been smarter to work it over just a little bit more. But I mean, as you mentioned, this is a team that's gone to four straight Grey Cups and come very close to winning them. I, in terms of getting over the hump, right, and actually winning the big game, I mean, I think it has to be said that Zach Collaros was not at all sharp in the last two Grey Cup games. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some pressure on Zach coming into this season, not so much from a regular season perspective, right? This is a two-time MLP, and one could argue he should have been the league's MLP this past year again. But when it comes to that big game, I think he's got to do a better job of controlling the football. I think he's got to do a better job of making better decisions. I mean, this team has such an unbelievably strong home field advantage. I don't think they've really been mm-hmm. tested in the mm-hmm. last few West finals, especially in the weather, right? I mean, BC, a team that is a dome team and can't run the football, I don't think pushed them very hard in that West final. Now, I think the Lions have done a good job of maybe being ready to run the football a little bit more in 2024, kind of, I think, as I would suspect, as a means of trying to pull even with Winnipeg and give them a bigger run for their money. But to me, it comes down to Zach Kolaris in those big games. Can he get it done? Because he hasn't the last couple of years.
And just one more for you, John. This morning, the Bombers, I know you're out there in Winnipeg. They announced that a former Bomber great and their president and CEO, Lyle Bauer, passed away at the age of 65. Do you have a memory of Lyle Bauer? Is he, you know, he was kind of bringing the Bombers up when they were in a tough time.
Yeah, I don't know, and I suppose I didn't know Lyle Bauer personally. Mm-hmm. He was around the team before I started covering it, but I mean, he was the CEO and the president of the team for 10 years. While I suppose I was going to games as a kid, as a fan, and certainly there were some lean years in Winnipeg. But you know, I think that. What Lyle did, especially even off the field as he got older, starting the Never Alone Foundation, he did a lot for his community, right? I mean, the Bombers went to a couple of Grey Cups during his tenure as an administrator, didn't win one, but he did win three as a player, should be noted.
Yes,
was an excellent offensive lineman alongside, you know, guys like Chris Walby and Miles Garrell and a number of very talented offensive lines that helped Winnipeg kind of be a dynasty for large portions of the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So certainly sad news. I know that he'd struggled previously with his health. I know that he'd had at least one previous bout of cancer. I obviously don't know the details yet, but
yeah,
unfortunate news, of course.
Yeah, I also spent time here in the Calgary Stampeders organization as a CEO and president after leaving the Bombers there in 2009. John, I know there's a whole bunch of CFL we can uncover here in the next few weeks before preseason starts up. We'll do this again very soon, buddy. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your morning and talking with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. There you go. John Hodge, CFL reporter over at Three Down Nation. JC Abbott, John Hodge, Justin Dunk do wonderful work at Three Down Nation. If you want CFL news, go over there. Give those boys a follow. Yeah, rest in peace to Lyle Bauer. It was a great Blue Bomber, great administrator for the team. And yeah, he did spend some time here in our fair city as well as the president of the Calgary Stampeders for four seasons.